Welcome to this podcast from Riverside Church Whitstable.
We hope you find it helpful and encouraging.
If you would like to find out more information about us,
why not check out our website at riversideuk.org,
our Facebook page, or follow us on Twitter at Whit Riverside.
Yeah, I was expecting a whole other section on camping. No? Okay, forget that then. Right. Let's talk about mountains instead. We sing a lot about mountains, don't we? We use a metaphor of mountains a lot in our songs. And we thought over the next 4 weeks we'd look at the symbolism of mountains and how they can represent different things in our lives at different times. Anyone know the definition of a mountain in the UK? Definition of a mountain? Martin must know this.
2 kilometres.
2 kilometres high?
I don't know.
Wow.
I'll put you in your misery. 610 metres. 610 metres defines a mountain. So 2,000 feet. I mean, you weren't far away.
Just, that's what I meant.
It's just... Anyone... Now, I know we live in quite a flat part of the world, but anyone know some of the higher places around us? I'll start off some dizzy heights. Clapham Hill. 68 metres above sea level. Anyone know what the number 2 is on this map? I'll point that out to you. Number 2. Just there. Well, no, number 2? Chartham Downs. Chartham Downs, they're the dizzy height of 111 metres. About number 3?
Why?
It's actually Beach Pollard, that well-known mountain. 124. The last one, number 6, is the dizzy height of 147 metres. Anyone know what it's called? It's called the Mount. It's called the Mount because some years ago, someone built a mount on top of the mount. So there it is. They built a little pile of something to make it a bit higher. They realised there weren't many high places in Kent, so they want to go up a bit further. And then someone built something on top of that as well. So that's the highest place you've got around here, 147 metres, near Shottenden. Anyone ever been there? You've been up that? Is it good? It's average. OK, right, OK. So... If you stand on that thing, you can see as far as Canterbury Cathedral on a good day, which sounds great. If you look at the map, you'll see actually that green is flat and Kent is pretty flat. Even more interesting, blue is underwater. So anything blue on that map is below sea level. So large portions of the land that we live on are actually below sea level. Don't worry too much, I'm sure. But you've got various coastal defences around the area to keep the water out. But you can see... We don't encounter many physical mountains in this part of the world, in Kent. You have to go to the Kent Downs before you get anything up to about 200 metres and higher. But so there aren't many physical mountains in this part of the world, as you probably know. But, as I said, mountains can be metaphorical. They can be things that we encounter in our life through different circumstances, through things that happen to us, different challenges, different interactions. Can always seem like mountains. We do use this... symbols of mountains a lot in the songs we sing, don't we? We use them to describe places that seem hard to overcome or challenges that we face. And circumstances in our life can sometimes feel like mountains. They can seem to be impassable. They can seem to be difficult to even overcome. They can seem to be impossible sometimes. But navigating mountains in our lives really helps us to grow spiritually, helps to grow emotionally, and learning to navigate these difficult circumstances that we come across is really important in our spiritual journey. And the other thing is mountains can be real places of encounter with God. In the challenging times, we can find God in new ways, in really intimate and deep ways, when we don't find him in kind of the flatlands of normality. And so over the next 4 weeks, we're going to use this symbolism of mountains to push into some of these challenging places that we experience with God. And try and navigate some of these challenges that we come across. An important rule, which Martin will know, when you tackle mountains, you don't tend to go up on your own. You tend to go up with friends. You tend to go up with companions because it's dangerous to traverse mountains on your own. So as we go through this series, again, we're doing it together. We're doing it with trusted companions. We're doing it with friends, people who can help us overcome and navigate the mountains of life. So we start this series. Let's just pray. I shared this, the fact we were doing this series with Liz and Glenn yesterday, and it really spoke to them that actually the timing of this series with what's going on for them with Emily also seems to coincide. So we're just going to pray before we start. Lord, we thank you that you help us to navigate the challenges of life, and the things that seem like mountains to us, the places that seem impassable. God, you're there, and we can find you there, God. We can find you there in unique and special ways. So, Lord, I pray as we start this series, God, you would help us to walk with you in these challenging places, but also to find you in real intimacy. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. I want to look today, as we begin this series, at two mountain encounters from the Scriptures, one in the Old Testament and one in the New. So we're going to begin by reading from Exodus chapter 3, and we're going to talk about Moses. He says, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. He led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, 'I'll go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up.' When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, 'Moses, Moses.' And Moses said, 'Here I am.' 'Do not come any closer,' God said. 'Take off your sandals, for the place where you're standing is holy ground.' Then he said to him, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God." So a bit of backstory for Moses, for those of us who don't know. Moses was born in Egypt. The Israelites were in captivity in Egypt, working under Pharaoh. They'd been kind of enslaved there. And Pharaoh was really concerned that the Israelites were growing in number. So he said to the midwives, any male children that are born, I want you to kill them, literally at birth, to decrease the ability for the Israelites to multiply. So a lady has a baby boy, manages to hide him, and then realises he's in danger. So she puts him in a basket and puts him in the river rushes where Pharaoh's daughter's going to come and bathe. And Pharaoh's daughter finds Moses, finds the baby, calls him Moses, because she draws him out of the water. And he's raised as an Egyptian. He's raised all the privilege of being in the Egyptian household. So that's his beginning of his story. But then one day he sees an Egyptian beating an Israelite, probably an overseer who's beating this Israelite for not working hard enough or whatever. And Moses takes the law into his own hands and he grabs the Egyptian and he kills him. He kills him and he buries the body in the sand. He thinks he's doing the right thing. He thinks he's doing the just thing. But actually Pharaoh hears about the killing and then Moses is on the run. He has to flee from Egypt because Pharaoh wants to capture him and kill him. And Moses flees about 300 miles away to a place called Midian. And there he encounters some shepherd women who he helps at a well. Ends up going back to meet the father. Long story short, he ends up marrying one of the shepherdesses, a lady called Zipporah. They have a son, and Moses names him Gershom, which means foreigner, because Moses says, "I'm a foreigner in a foreign land." So Moses is this guy who grew up in privilege and responsibility, and now he's on the run. He's kind of an outcast. He's in this barren place. He's in the wilderness. He's no longer in the court of Pharaoh. He's a shepherd. In a sense, he's gone from prominence to obscurity. He's gone from privilege to fear of punishment. And that's where he is when he has this encounter with God in this bush. So imagine Moses' mindset before this encounter. He's probably feeling pretty hopeless, pretty destitute, pretty abandoned by God, pretty overlooked by God. And you might have times in your life when you feel the same. You might feel at one point you're in prominence and suddenly you find yourself in obscurity. Or you find yourself in a place where you've lost your bearings and you've lost sight of God. And that can feel like a real mountain place, a real barren place. And that's where Moses is when the burning bush encounter happens. Now, the writers, they talk about the mountain of God, but that's a bit of a spoiler because nothing's happened here yet. Horeb, the word Horeb just means hot place or dry place. And so nothing's happened yet at Horeb. The writer has just got ahead of himself in describing it as the mountain of God because we know nothing in the Scriptures that has happened yet at Horeb. It's just a hot, dry, dusty, barren mountain place. And the fact it was hot is significant because Moses had probably seen lots of bushfires as he'd been doing his shepherding. He'd probably gone around and seen things smouldering and burning because of the heat of the place. And so the fact that bushes caught fire wasn't unusual for Moses. What was unusual for Moses was that this bush was on fire, but it wasn't burning up. It was just on fire, but the fire wasn't consuming the wood of the bush. And that's what drew Moses' attention, because he says, I'll go over and see this strange sight. Why isn't this bush burning up? And as Moses draws closer, he realises it's God's presence within the bush that's creating the illusion of this flame, this heat. And God has created this consecrated place for Moses to encounter God with the burning bush. So that's our first mountain encounter we're going to talk about today. Our second one is in the New Testament. So we're going to whiz over to Mark 9. It says this, after 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James and John with him and led them up a high mountain. When they were all alone, there he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, Rabbi, is it good for us to be here? Let's put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses and one for Elijah. He did not know what he was saying. He was so frightened. And then a cloud appeared and covered them, and a voice came from the cloud. This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him. Suddenly, when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. They kept the matter to themselves, discussing what rising from the dead meant. Before taking Peter, James and John up this mountain, Jesus had been explaining to them and explained to all his followers that he was going to the cross, that he would go to the cross, he would die, and he would raise himself up 3 days later. And he said to them, the cost of discipleship is essentially anyone who wants to follow me has to pick up their cross, has to deny themselves and follow me. And 6 days later, he takes these handful of closer disciples up the mountain to this encounter. Now, the Gospels don't tell us which mountain this is, but it's probably a place called Mount Tabor. Here it is. It's about 575 metres high. It doesn't quite qualify as a mountain by our modern 610 metre standard, but it's the highest place around the area there. And it's still quite a climb. Anybody who's climbed Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh? Anyone? Well, it's twice as high in a bit, so it's quite a long way up. And that's the high place that Jesus takes Peter, James and John up for this encounter. So he's transfigured. It's a strange word in the scriptures. The word is the word we used a couple of weeks ago. It's metamorphosis. He's changed physically before their eyes into something different. It says in the scriptures that his clothes become dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them, which is the best the gospel writer can use to describe how white and probably luminous Jesus got. There's a company that makes very white paint, okay? It's called White 2.0. Here you are, they paint this pink unicorn with it, okay? Now, that doesn't look very white, does it? That just looks like white to you, doesn't it? Yeah? But when you put that unicorn next to something that is white, like that panda, look how white it is. It's a lot whiter. It's a lot whiter. But that isn't the whitest thing in the world. You can get something even whiter. It's called Spectralon. There it is. That little disc there is the whitest substance known to man. It's so expensive to make, it costs £500 for a piece this big. I was going to try and get some, but I thought that's a bit expensive for a sermon illustration. That's the whitest thing. And the guys in the scriptures were trying to think of ways to describe just how transfigured Jesus was. And so they said he's whiter than any cloth that could ever be bleached. That's how kind of luminous and transfigured he is. They were struggling to find metaphors or adjectives to describe just what happened to Jesus. Something happened to him that was so dramatic, the gospel writers had to say, well, it's just like cloth, but it's not like any cloth you've seen before. So Jesus transfigures before them. They have this encounter. And then Moses and Elijah appear as well next to Jesus. And Peter, bless him, ever the activist, wants to be useful, says, so I'll put up three tents for you. I mean, Peter. He doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know what to do. He just wants to be useful. And I'll put up a tent each for you guys, because obviously you need tents. But God says to him, Peter, this is my son, whom I love. Listen to him. So we have two very different mountain encounters here, one in the Old Testament, one in the New. God being present in both in different ways. What can we learn from these two stories? Well, I think the first thing is that God can meet us in unexpected places. God can meet us in unexpected places. Neither Moses all those disciples had any expectation that God would meet them in the way that it happened in those two encounters. They might have expected to meet God in a temple or a sanctified place, but actually he met them in these barren, exposed, mountainous environments. And it was God's presence in these environments that made them holy places of encounter, a place of consecration. And so it raises the question for you and me, where do we expect to meet God? Where do we expect to meet God? Is your expectation limited to a church service? Is it limited to a life group? Is it limited to a consecrated place or what you see as a God space? Where's your expectation? Because if we shift our expectation, then we can expect to meet God in the barren places as well as what we perceive to be the churchy or the holy spaces. So where's your barren place this morning? Where is the place you've got the lowest expectation to meet God? Where's that mountain place for you? And what would it look like to meet God there? What would it look like to meet God in that place where you least expect him? Perhaps you could begin to pray this week and say, God, I want to meet you in that place where I least expect to find you. I want to meet you there. I want you to change my expectation of whether you can be present in that space. It might be a space at work. It might be a space at home. It might be a difficult relational space. It could be any sort of space where you least expect to find God. But we can change our expectation because God will and can meet us in different places if we change our attitude and our expectation. The stories also show us that God meets us in unexpected ways. These stories are very familiar to us now, but before Moses, there was no burning bush story. There was no burning bush narrative to say God's likely to turn up in a bush that doesn't burn up. Before Moses, that hadn't been an expected way. There's no pre-Jesus transfiguration moment. You know, Jesus does this all the time. He lights up, so expected to happen. It hadn't happened before until it happened to Peter, James and John on that day. So God shows up in ways that we don't expect. But often because we've been around church, or maybe we've been raised in religious ways, we've got an expectation that God will meet us in certain ways. And we limit our expectation to those particular things. But when was the last time you were surprised by God? It's a great question, isn't it? When's the last time God really surprised you? Well, put another way, when was the last time you were dazzled by Jesus? When was the last time Jesus turned up in such a way that you were dazzled by his presence in your life? You were dazzled by the fact that he turned up in an unexpected way in a certain situation. If our expectation of God is always rooted in our tradition or our past circumstance, then we're never going to be surprised by God. We're never going to be expecting that God can turn up in a different way or a new way or reveal himself to us in a different way. If your faith is too familiar, if your experience of church is too familiar, if your expectation is low, then you have a low expectation of meeting God in these unusual places. So what should we do? Well, I think we can constantly invite God, open our hearts, say, God, I want to meet you anywhere. I want to meet you everywhere. I want to look for you in all the different places in my life. I want you to dazzle me. I want you to turn up and surprise me. I want you to do things that are outside my norm. So what might a burning bush moment look like for you and me? To see something that goes beyond what we normally expect, what we've normally encountered. What would need to happen for you to be dazzled by Jesus? Because we can move on past the things of God. Moses had to turn aside to the burning bush. The disciples had to follow Jesus up that mountain for that encounter. Moses could have kept on walking with his sheep and said, well, that looks like a bush that's on fire, but hey, I've got things to do. I've got sheep to look after. I've got to crack on. It's dry, it's dusty, I'm thirsty, it's hot. I want to find some shelter. I'm going to ignore that burning bush. Peter, James and John could have said, Jesus, do we really have to climb 600 metres in this heat? Can we just stay down here? Can't we just stay where it's comfortable? And you know, I'm happy down here. I don't want to have to climb that mountain with you. They could have turned away. They could have refused to climb. And we can do the same. We can We can refuse to step off the path. We can refuse to push into the things that are hard. We can just say, actually, I'd rather stay here. I'd rather stay in what I know and where I'm comfortable and where it's relatively easy. But are we limiting our opportunities to meet with God in new ways by doing that? I called you to shout out this morning. Keith said, tell him we don't normally do that. Well, we don't normally do that, but occasionally we do things like that. Now, you could have thought, there's no way I'm shouting in church. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Or you could have thought, actually, needs must, I'm going to shout. Now, it doesn't mean to say we're going to define a methodology of prayer by shouting, or that I could point to anything that says, if we shout, you know, God might hear us because he's a bit hard of hearing. But sometimes we're called to do things that are a little bit outside the norm. I remember years ago, I invited everyone to stand on their chairs in a prayer meeting. I don't know why I did it, I just felt led to do it. And a few people did it. It was okay. No one fell off a chair, it was all right. Sometimes we need to push outside of the things that are just comfortable and normal and everyday, because we read these stories in the scriptures and we think, well, that's great for that person. But actually, there's burning bush moments for us all. There's transfiguration moments for us all if we are prepared to push in to these harder places with God. What else do these mountain stories show us? Well, quickly, God wants to show us he's present in all the different aspects of life. When Moses goes to the bush, God says to him, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He's saying to Moses, I have been present through the generations of your family. I have been present through the genealogy of your family. I'm the God who was present then and is present now. I've been through it all and I'm here now. I'm the same God. I'm present. I was present with Abraham. I was present with Isaac. I'm present with Jacob. Now I'm present with you. And he reminds Moses that he's the God who's there through it all. And when God speaks to Peter, James and John, he says, guys, this is my son whom I love. Listen to him. I'm present here in the person of Jesus. Pay attention. Listen. I'm present. So in the hard places, in the isolation, in the obscurity, God is always wanting to remind you and me that he's present. He is present. He is there. He's not the God who dips in and out. He's with us in all these different aspects of life. And he's reminding us that he's present, and he's reminding us that he loves us, and he's reminding us that we're not alone. He's there to guide us and support us. And that leads us to our last point, which I think is probably the most important. Mountains can be places where God really draws close to us. It's in the mountains that God reveals his plan to Moses to rescue the Israelites from bondage. It's in the mountains that Jesus reveals his true self to disciples. He says, hey guys, this is really me. You get a glimpse of the resurrected Jesus. This is where the story's going. This is what I'm really like. And they get like a sneak preview. They get a heads up of actually, this is the true nature of the person of Jesus Christ. He gives them a glimpse of what life after death is going to look like for him, the resurrected, glorified Jesus. And so in these mountain places, these barren places, they can often be a place of true intimacy, where God reveals things to us that we don't see in the everyday. We get closer to the heart of God. As all the other stuff kind of falls away, we're in those exposed places. We get closer to the heart of God, the nature of God, God's will for our lives. We get things revealed to us. And it is hard work in the barrenness, in the work of the climb. It's arduous, but sometimes in those moments, we encounter God in ways like we've never encountered him before. He comes to us, he reminds us that he's present in our story. He reminds us of our part in the story. And so part of this series is to help us reframe our expectations of where we might meet God and how God might meet us. What it might look like to deepen our relationship with him. As I said, there aren't any physical mountains in our area, but there are many metaphorical ones, many symbolic ones that you are facing right now in your life. The mountains that you could name this morning to me if I asked you, different mountains that are in front of you that feel challenging, that feel difficult, that feel hard. But God is going to meet you in them or on them. God is going to meet you in the climb. He's going to be present in those difficult places. So I'm inviting you to reframe your expectations about where God can turn up in your life and how he can turn up in your life. The prophet Habakkuk wrote these words. He said, "The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to tread on the heights." And in a sense, God calls us and equips us to those high place encounters with him. He equips us to walk those difficult, narrow paths. He looks to meet us in those high places. He gives us the ability and the grace to navigate the mountains that we face in life. He enables you and me to tread on the heights. He's with us in all these challenges. If you're able, will you stand with me? So you may have a mountain that you're facing this morning. Why not just give that to the Lord now? Just name that in your heart. Just say, "Lord, this is my mountain. This is the thing that is in front of me." You may have a number, you might have a whole range of mountains that you're looking at this morning. And I say, "Lord, I want to meet you there. I want to recognize that you are there. Ask for the grace to reframe your expectation. You might have completely given up any hope of meeting God in that place, or that God could move in that place, but he can. And he can meet you in a new way. He can meet you in an intimate way. So, Lord, would you help us change our expectation of who you are and what you can and can't do? And Lord, we want to find you in those mountain places. We want to experience you. We want to be places of encounter, places of intimacy, where we go deeper with you, we learn more about you. Let's just spend a few moments just allowing God to speak to our hearts as these guys gently play.
Thank you for listening.
If you'd like to contact us about this talk,
to hear more or to find out about Riverside Church Whitstable,
then visit our website at riversideuk.org.
Also, you can contact us through our Facebook page or tweet us at @WhitRiverside.